That's it. Well, what else are you going to do?
Nothing, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. You just go out and you're like... Otherwise, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're just going to say, I'm going to start next week. It's a diet. Mm. It's a fucking diet. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to eat cream cakes and you're just going to keep putting weight on, the only way you're going to stop putting weight on is if you stop eating the cream cakes. It's just reverse of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're never going to get anywhere if you don't start or you don't stop.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Running From Comfort. Today's show, our guest is Robbie Bell. Now, Robbie is a chef from the UK who's turned into a bit of an entrepreneur, and he runs his business, City Larder. As well as that, he has his very own podcast, which I highly recommend you check out. It is called Cooking the Books. On that show, Robbie has on some of Australia's biggest and most well-known chefs, as well as other chefs from around the world, and they just cut the mustard about food and everything else to do with the hospitality industry. So check that one out. It is a really good podcast. It has my recommendation. Now, in terms of today's show, you're going to hear about Robbie's story. You're going to hear about how he built his business from nothing. And not only that, he had a newborn child at the time. So today I talked to Robbie about what it was like for him building that business from nothing. As well as that, we talk a little bit about his backstory because, you know, like I always like to say, we are all shaped from all of our previous and past experiences, and it's what makes us who we are today. So I get to talk to Robbie a little bit about his backstory as well, just so I can really get to understand who he is. Now, finally, if you enjoy today's show, do not forget to give it a rating and a review, and make sure you subscribe for future episodes. And if this is your first time listening, don't forget to go back through the catalog, check out some previous episodes. I've had some incredible guests on here. If you were just listening and you're just chilling at home, not doing anything, head on over to my YouTube channel, check out the video of this interview. You get to see our lovely faces, and you also get to see Robbie's fish in the background. All right, enough of me talking. Let's get on with today's show. So, Robbie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, just why don't you just introduce yourself briefly? Tell a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your backstory.
Yeah, so, like you say, Robbie Bell from England. Spent 25 years in the hospitality industry, restaurants, hotels, outside caterers, covered most areas of the hospitality industry, in the kitchen, I should add, yeah, not out front of the house, I ain't got the face for it, but,
yeah. Oh, don't cut yourself short.
yeah, and learned my craft, basically. Prior to that, I was always selling things, selling t-shirts to my mates, selling gobstoppers at the school, selling ciggies behind the bike sheds at school.
Can I interject just quickly? I used to do that. So probably my first little scam was start of grade 11. I used to buy everybody cigarettes in the morning. They'd let me keep the change and pocket some ciggies.
Yeah, so I was always selling stuff. Then I wanted to become a chef, so I trained to be a chef. And then I did a pop-up restaurant. Always trying to dabble a little bit, and always every restaurant I was in working at, I was always interested in the business side, making the money, the purchasing, and just the general running of it, and just trying to do the maths and writing business plans. It's a hobby of mine, and still to this day I write business plans all the time. Mm. So I just did that, and then we had a baby in 2014? Yeah,
you should know when your baby is born.
Yeah, 2014.
Hope the wife's not listening to this one.
November 2014. And realised that I needed to start a business. I couldn't keep working in the restaurant. The restaurant game is a really tough game, especially for married and relationships, and especially if you've got children. It's a really tough game. So I was like, I can't keep doing this. And we started City Larder, and that's kind of where we're at now.
Yeah, and so I'll just take it back a little bit, because what I want to actually ask you first is, I understand hospitality is a very tough industry. If you had to just name what's the toughest part about it, what would you say it is?
Probably the hours. Yeah, maybe not these days, but I can only feel when I was there, the hours are really tough. And, you know, missing out socially, that's really tough.
Mm.
But you love it as well. That's the thing. You love it. Mm. So the missing out on things is like the birthdays and things where you just can't get them off. Do you know what I mean? The actual nights, I guess. I'm like waffling a bit here, but
no, go for
it. I would still be in that industry if I hadn't have had Monty. Probably my wife was in that industry as well. She was front of house, so she would probably still be on the floor if I hadn't had my son. I love that industry. I love it. So when I say it was tough, it wasn't actually tough for me. I just know it's a tough industry. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, it wasn't tough for me.
What is it about it that you love so much?
Just the hustle, the bustle, the giving, the nature. And it's, if it's in your nature, if you're a giving person, if someone comes around your house and you have a party and you want everyone to have a good time, just in you, you know, like the fridge is open. If friends come around and the fridge is open, they're going to have what they want. If you're in the hospitality and giving is your nature, well then, you know, that's what I love about it.
That's awesome. And in terms of that, would you say then that the hospitality industry almost gave you a good sort of, I don't know, got you sort of ready for business in the sense that you already had the long hours in you?
Oh, yeah, I guess. I've never really thought of it like that. But yeah, probably, yeah. Like, I've always said, one of my friends said, you say, oh, the hours. And I said, well, what else would you be doing? And I still do that to this day. Like, if you're not working, what else are you doing? I don't get it. That's it. Like, what else is there? Really?
I don't know. Playing video games, watching Netflix.
I'm just not
going for long strolls.
Yeah.
Not your thing.
No, I like to be building something. Mm. I always got to be building something. I want to be growing. I want to be, like, even when I was a chef, every night I would get home and read cookbooks. Even like 1 a.m, I'd always try and open up a cookbook before I go to bed and flick through and read a few recipes, study the books, know where all the recipes were within the books. You know, so if I needed a juice from artichoke soup, I could flick through Tom Aikens. I know there's a juice from artichoke soup in Tom Aikens' book. I'm pretty sure there is. So I can still, you know, I'd flick through and remember, so I could always refer back to books. And I've always just been interested in building things.
Mm. Yeah. And what got you sparked in this interest in cooking? Like,
probably grandparents. My grandmother, yeah. She was... And actually, the cooking side, I'm interested in, obviously... But I'm really interested in taking a secondary product and turn it into a premium product. That's what I'm really interested in. So, like, it's not necessarily the cooking that I'm interested in. It's like, if you see a big pile of mushrooms and a big, yeah, let's just say a big pile of onions and a big pile of leeks and a big pile of potatoes, let's just say, for instance, and then 3 hours later you come back and you've got pans of soup, pans of leek and potato soup. That's what I'm interested in, that process. How do you get that raw product to this consumer product? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so yeah. Sort of your mindset's all about, like, getting it to that point of change, I guess.
And yeah, and turning, like, this product that's $20 into this product that's now $60. That's what I'm interested in.
And did you think about it like that when you were working in the industry as well?
Probably not as much as I do, as I've learned over the time. That's what I'm interested in. Okay. It took me a while to learn that that's actually one of the part I'm interested in. I always used to look at capsicums, and like say we're making harissa, and I'd look at the box, big massive box of capsicums, and then I'd look at, and then like, if, you know, a couple hours later, we'd have like a tub of harissa. I'd be like, I like that. I don't know why, I just like that.
So what is that? You said harissa. What is that dish?
Like a spicy red pepper sauce.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like a sauce, like a dip, it can be a marinade, it can be a lot of things, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's the process I like.
That's awesome. So then, going through your life, so you've lived in a fair few different areas, you've got a lot of exposure to, you know, different areas of the industry, I suppose. Can you talk a little bit about that and some of the different places you've lived and maybe what you might have learned in those places?
Yeah, for sure. I learned in the cities. Like, I started my apprenticeship in a small town. Mm. It was very like cozy, and everyone was supporting each other, and it was a really good environment. And then I moved to a city like Manchester, where everyone's a little bit more dog eat dog. Do you know what I mean? A little bit more aggressive.
Everyone's trying to get ahead.
A
little bit like Melbourne.
No,
you don't think Melbourne's
I definitely don't. I definitely don't. And then I was going to say, then I come to Australia, and everyone's and where I worked, I don't know everywhere. I haven't worked in every restaurant or whatever, but where I worked, I felt like everyone's really supportive again. Do you know what I mean? So there's some of the things that I've probably learned along the way. And regarding cooking, like in Australia, I learned a lot about raw fish, heaps about raw fish, crudos, sashimi. You eat a lot of raw fish, and a lot more of the Asian produce over here, a lot of the Chinese influence, Japanese influence, Sichuan pepper, and, you know, soy sauce, and wakame, and kombu, and all these kind of different ingredients from Asia. And then in Europe, it's a lot more, you know, like red wine vinegar, cognac, vermouth, Pernod, Mirepoix, a lot more, you know, especially back in them days, just a lot more classic French style. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the comparisons between Europe and England and Australia. And obviously you've got the great fish here and heaps of fantastic produce. But as a standout, I would say the Asian influence here was what I learned a lot.
Yeah, okay. And like for Australia compared to other parts of the world, do you find it's maybe more like, would you say multicultural in terms of like your food choices? Like here in Melbourne, I don't think there's probably a cuisine you couldn't find.
Yeah, for sure. Again, without going referring back to it too much, more the Asian side for sure. Like in England, we have fantastic Indian food, like some of the best Indian food in the world, I would probably say. We've got Mission Star Indian restaurants in England and fantastic Indian restaurants, and way over here, it's just nowhere near that standard. It just isn't. That's the reality. They're good, they're tasty, but nowhere near the standard that we have in it. And that's from like, you know, like street food Indian English, let's say, to one star Michelin. Right the way across the board, it's head and shoulders. But yet over here, the Chinese food in England as a whole is pretty average, and that's being pretty generous. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's very sticky. It's very, you know, very, even though a lot of Chinese food is deep fried, but it's very gloopy, just not as good. Where here, it's really fresh. It's a lot more traditional. It's even regional, you know, different regions. Yeah. And that, like you get in Italy, different regions, and it's the same within China, and you can feel that here in Australia.
Yeah. Definitely, we have that sort of vibe as well. I mean, there's almost like a place you can't go anywhere in Australia without finding a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, and the influence that does, you know, like really good chefs, like the likes of Neil Perry that are then bringing them techniques of deep frying pigeons and deep frying whole chickens and using Szechuan and using different spices and whatnot within his, and turn that into Australian food, because you know that's the influence.
Mm. And in your own career, did you find yourself doing much experimenting in terms of like the foods that you'd put together, or?
You know what? Not really. I've always been pretty like bread and butter kind of person. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm never like going, I'm not super creative in that way. I just aren't. It's just not, my mind doesn't really work in like pushing the boundaries. Flavor combinations and whatnot. Yeah, you know, but nothing wacky, nothing like any, you know, some people that you would think of being out there or anything. Definitely not.
Yeah, okay. And then so you said that you were always sort of really drawn to the business side of things. What do you think got you interested in that?
I've always been into Richard Branson. I'm dyslexic. And Richard Branson's also dyslexic. Mm. So as a role model, when I was younger, people would use Richard Branson as a role model. My parents, my grandparents would use him as a role model. Look what he's achieved, and he's dyslexic. Look what, you know, that gets drilled in here. And anyone, I guess anyone, like you hear black children or Aboriginal children or whatever saying, you know, they didn't have anyone to look up to, where now they've got superstars in AFL or in acting or in business or whatever. Yeah. You need them people to look up to and go, if he can do it, well then I can do it. So that was, Richard Branson was my one at the beginning, and I think that's what got me interested in it. I was like, oh, who's he? And then, you know, I knew he started a magazine, and then I knew he had a record shop, and I read his autobiography, kind of got it on audiobook. And that's kind of got my brain ticking, yeah.
Mm. And I just want to go on a slight tangent there, because I think that's very interesting, you know, how important the influence of having a role model for you was, you know, considering you said you're dyslexic, and you're like, you know, to have someone like Richard Branson there and to be like, oh, if he can do it, I can too. That's something that I think is so powerful in the day of the internet, because, I mean, if there's someone that you want to look up to, there's probably a podcast with them somewhere, and then you can hear their story and you think, oh, wow, yeah, this person's not too different to me.
Definitely, 100%. Well, exactly, like you say, with the internet now, there's so much information out there, and you can find out, like you say, like you can track their career step by step, and you can follow them through Instagram on a day-to-day basis or whatever. for the good or for the better, for the bad, I'm not sure, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. There's a degree where I think it, you know, you might get too, a little bit too obsessed, or you might waste too much time. But also, I mean, and like you said as well, you can track their career. I mean, you know, if you're a crafty person out there and you think, oh geez, I'd like to be like Richard Branson, well, I don't know, go have a study of his career, see if you can reverse engineer it. I mean,
yeah, for sure. You know, nowadays you can fucking DM it. Do you know what I mean? You can just say, this is who I am. But back in the day, it was a letter through such and such.
How many different agents as well?
Yeah, exactly. All these kind of things. Where now they do speaking events. Now you can just go to them and that, yeah.
I will ask you. So, because you also have your own podcast. You want to shout that out? What's this podcast here?
Cooking the Books.
Cooking the Books, yeah. And you've had some high-profile chefs on there?
Yeah, for sure.
How did you get in contact with them?
A lot of them are friends.
Okay.
Yeah, quite a few of them are my friends. Because I've been in the industry quite a long time. Suppliers who we use, and suppliers who I've seen on Instagram and whatnot. Farmers markets.
Hmm.
Some of the people I've met at farmers markets. Friends of friends. And then some, how did I get... The biggest person we've had on the podcast is Ben Shuey, for sure. He's like, his restaurant just won Best Restaurant in Australia. He was in the top 50 for many years. Trying to think how I got into... Oh, a friend of mine was working there, and he asked him, and that was it, basically. And he said yes, because he eats our pate.
Oh, so, okay.
Ben Shuey eats our pate. He actually says that on the podcast. He said, the only reason I'm doing this is because I love your pate so much. So, yeah, and that was it, basically.
So there we go. The quality product is always going to win.
Yeah, would have got won him over, exactly.
But something important there was, I suppose, everything that you've been doing, it's all about connections. And in terms, so from the podcast side of things, do you find that's the same being in business as well? A lot of it's about the connections that you have?
Yeah, I think so. But we didn't have any connections at the beginning. That was the thing. You've got to build them relationships. Do you know what I mean? And there can't be fake relationships. They've got to be true relationships. You've got to go out your way. You've got to bend over backwards to help people out and ensure that you're keen, ensure that you're eager, ensure that you'll go the extra mile when they need it. At the beginning, you need to create the relationships. Like I said, we didn't have any contacts.
Yeah. So
in the sales, I'm talking. I've got contacts within the industry, the cooking industry, the restaurant industry, but not in... We then went on to be a wholesaler for retail, and I was never in retail.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about when you started this business, because you did build it up from nothing. And, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, you know, a lot of people, they kind of flirt or dream with the idea of starting a business, and a lot of people don't know how. A lot of people might use the excuse that I don't have anything. So you essentially built it from nothing. So how did you come about this business?
I come about it because I've been making terrines for a lot of years. Terry Laybourne, shout out to Terry Laybourne, he trained me how to do it. He was an incredibly talented chef from England. He's got multiple restaurants and he's brought on so many young guys and he trained super well. He trained me how to do it and how to make them. And I made them as a Christmas hamper for the staff. Like I said, just after Monty was born, I made these Christmas hampers for the staff. One of the girls, Amy, said you should do that as a business. I'd been trying, like I said again at the beginning, I always write business plans, and I wrote a business plan for a cafe, a pizzeria, fine dining, you know, all these different things, and I just couldn't get them to work. I couldn't get them to work for many reasons: labour, cost, no scalability, no cash to start it off, these kind of things. So I was like, what am I going to do? Amy said that. I thought, well, that's a pretty good, I enjoy making them. No one else is really doing it at the standard that I can do it at. It's an easy entry to market. You don't need to buy, you know, a big restaurant with X amount of seats and a bar and stock and a cellar and this and that and the other and a minimum amount of staff. You know, even in a small restaurant, you need fucking four staff. Do you know what I mean? You're going to need two in the kitchen, two front of house. Let's just say that's in a small restaurant. Do you know what I mean? So you need four, even just to open the doors, you need four staff and X amount of chairs and whatnot. So where are you going to get that cash from when you don't have it? So it was really easy entry to market, and it just all worked out. So and then I just then we just went after it, basically, and got going on it. We did the maths, worked it all out, and just went started going knocking door to door. You know, like went to the market,
You started off door to door?
Door to door, just went down South Melbourne Market, Emerald Deli, first customer, went down. My wife went down, I was making them, my wife went down. She worked front of house anyway. She just had a baby, just had a fucking baby at this point, so we've got the baby.
Have you got the baby with you when you're doing this?
Sometimes. Beck used to take the baby. Mm. We used to do deliveries with me driving, Beck in the passenger seat, Monty asleep in his carrier, the three of us with an Esky in the boot back in the day. Like, fucking totally, like, just pounding the pavement, you know? Like, and then we just sold one to Emerald Deli in South Melbourne Market, and I said, she said, ring me next week, and she said, oh, I'll take another one. It was sold well. So then we got in touch with her, got in touch with her again, and that we sold her a few weeks, and then we're like, well, let's get another customer, and then...
And it just kept building.
And we just get a snowball effect, you know? Like, so that was... Now we've got, like, I don't know, over 300, you know, like from Cairns to Adelaide, two distributors, one in South Australia, and then the same, we use Fino Foods, who are in New South Wales and in Queensland, that we use the same distributor for both states. Yeah, and just slowly, man, but fuck, it's hard. I mean, it's really, really, really hard, incredibly difficult. You're always going at it, just chipping away and always growing. You know, we started off... Our first delivery, we didn't even have a tax invoice. We didn't know how to do a tax invoice. On the way to do the delivery, we pulled into Office Works, got a tax invoice book, and we wrote it out on the way. We didn't have a tax invoice, you know. And then we went from that, and then we got some branded ones. And then we went from branded ones to zero, which we could afford to have zero, and then we could do. Then we could print the invoices out, you know what I mean? And then we got to, and we just built and built and built.
So when you started, there was obviously a lot of things you hadn't sort of figured out. Did you go in knowing that you were just going to figure this out as you went along?
Yeah. It's a simple answer.
That's it. You just dove in.
That's it. Well, what else are you going to do?
Nothing, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you just go out and you're like, otherwise, what are you doing? You're just going to say, I'm going to start next week. It's a diet. It's a fucking diet. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to eat cream cakes and you're just going to keep putting weight on, the only way you're going to stop putting weight on is if you stop eating the cream cakes. It's just reverse of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're never going to get anywhere if you don't start or you don't stop. It's simple as that. You just got to get after it.
I suppose what a lot of people lack is that mindset in terms of just taking action. And like you said, it's very much just like a diet. It's no different. I suppose it doesn't matter what your goals really are. It's just all about making sure that you just take the action. And if you worry that you haven't got it all figured out, I mean, here you are. And did you have any sales experience when you were doing door-to-door knock? No. You're just going around the markets. Hey, here's my product. Would you like to buy some? Just pure logic at the end of the day. That's all it was. Just pure logic.
What else do you have to do? There's nothing else complicated, is it? You've got a product. Is it good? Do you believe in it? Be honest with yourself. Do you believe in it? If you believe in it, it's pretty easy. I knew that was the best product on the market, and it's still the best product on the market to this day. You know, I believe in it. I know how good it is. There's no one else doing it as good as we're doing it. There's no one that can offer the service that we supply, Rebecca, my wife, who, next level service in a wholesale environment. Next level. There's no one as good as we are at that. There just isn't. She's worked at 3-star Michelin restaurants, working on the floor at places like Key, at places like Rockpool, places like the Fat Dog, and these kind of places where she's worked. She delivers that service in a wholesale environment. There's no one doing that. So we just make sure that we're the best at what we do, and we believe in ourselves. And I don't think about failing. Never, ever.
Not even once.
I still don't. We're about to launch new products. We're about to launch a range of ready-to-go proteins. Not ready meals, but ready. We're going to do a 24-hour cooked free-range pork belly, a slow roast duck leg, and a red wine braised beef cheek, all in nice branding, all the rest of it. We're about to launch that. We've spent a lot of money to put that together, trying to get it organised. I don't think about it failing. I'm not saying it won't fail. Maybe it will fail, but I'm not going to fucking think about it failing. I'm going to think about it being just getting out there, and we'll get it out there, we'll get it going. We'll run it for a year, we'll make a decision, we'll let it go through all the cycle, through all the seasons, make sure, see where it goes, and if it works out, great. If it doesn't, we just put it in the bin and we move on. We don't think about that. Like, we don't think about it not working or failing. What's the point?
And so you're not attached to any particular idea at all?
Nothing, zero. We just move forward, that is it. Like, I don't think about that. I just don't. What's the point? There's no point.
No, but I mean, you know, for a lot of people, like, you know, that idea of failing, you know, I suppose it holds a lot of people back from things that they want to do. Were you always sort of like this? Or
dyslexic.
It's It's part of the dyslexia.
Dyslexia. When you can't stand, when you can't read, and you go to school in the 80s and the early 90s, and no one helps you, and you go into class, and all the room is like on the board, it's all written out in science, and it's all written in. It could be in fucking Chinese or fucking Japanese or any language in the world, because you don't know what's going on. And you sit down, and they're like, okay, just read that, follow the steps, and away you go. When you've had that all your life, then like, what's going on? I'm not bothered. Do you know what I mean?
If you don't mind me asking, how did you go in school? Like,
I didn't get any exam. Nothing. Zero. Nothing.
So what I might say here is that you've almost sort of gotten the opposite effect. I think a lot of where our fear of failure comes from is the conditioning that we get in school. Because, you know, I remember, you know, my experience in school was always make sure you get good grades. If you don't get good grades, you won't go to university, you won't get a good job. That's kind of sort of like the dream, well, not dream, but sort of like the life that we're all sort of brought up in. And then I suppose the idea of failing, you know, for my parents, if I was to fail anything, it would be absolutely, I'd get my ass whooped by dad.
Would you?
I'd get whooped. I remember one of the few things that I copped a whooping once from not doing so well with my grades when I was a bit younger, you know. So
yeah, nah. I don't give a fuck.
And
I don't give a fuck about that. And like, I'm great parenting, I guess. Great parenting through my mother. Great parenting through my grandmother. Never any pressure about work ethic is the most important thing. Grades don't matter, man. Grades just don't matter. Like, people think they do, they don't matter. But if you can outwork anyone, I used to always say when I was in the kitchens, there might be better chefs here, but I'll just start earlier and I'll just finish later than them. It doesn't bother me. I'll outwork it. You know, if I'll do 7 days when you're, you know, I'll do 21 days straight, no problem. I'll you know what I mean? I'll just outwork everyone. I used to say that all the time. Like, you might be better, but you can't work as hard.
Yeah, and what kind of, just on average, like, how many hours do you think you usually put in a week?
I run a business. You're just never off. You never, like, maybe I'll sit down. I tell a lot, I do love Survivor. Do you know Survivor? Mm-hmm. I love Survivor. So I definitely watch Survivor, and I love a bath. So I try and have a bath every night for a good hour. Every night, everyone's like, for an hour. Even in the summer, I just love it. Like, it's a good place for me to relax. And I've got a bit of a thing about heat shock proteins, a little bit of a thing. I think it's good for reducing your age and things. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. I just, Dr. Rhonda Patrick on the Joe Rogan podcast, I watched that one time. I was like, fuck, that sounds good to me. If I just got to sit in the bath for an hour, I'm sticking with that one.
The fountain of youth.
Yeah, exactly. So that, and I have a little bit with a little bit of time away. I don't know. I don't count fucking a lot.
So let's just say you're always working.
Yeah, always.
Bar an hour and a half every week.
a couple of hours a day, yeah.
Sorry, an hour and a half every day.
Yeah. Just because it's... Not because it's a job. Like, I say all the time, I retired at 35. Mm. I retired, that was it. I'm done. Like, now I work for myself. It's not really a job. Like, we're building a business. That's fucking fun. Do you know what I mean? If you're building a football team, is that on a, you know, or you're building as a hobby? This is a hobby, I guess, for me. But it's a hobby. I'm not joking. Like, it's hard and everything, but we're working for ourselves. I work with me and my wife. When I say I, it's definitely we. She plays as big of a role as I do, by, if not more. Like, without, it's a team at the end of the day. Without her, it wouldn't run. Without me, it wouldn't run. It's as simple as that. It's a classic team. It's a front and back restaurant style. I run the kitchen, she runs the front of the house. Same thing. I run the kitchen and the food and all that kind of operations, and she runs the packaging and distribution, and then we do the finances together. That's kind of that's the role that we work. And we are working for ourselves. No one to answer to. Creating money from a business that we created out of nothing that supports us and our family and 10 other eight other staff. Like, it's a fucking dream come true, isn't it?
So there's no way you'd ever look at it as work.
I say I'm going to work, but not really. Like, it just isn't. It's just not the same. It's not the same as going in and going, oh, gonna, you know, like, is he gonna twist at me about this? Is he gonna bollock me about that? I've got to reply to that. You know, it's not like that. because you're building something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically how I see it.
And that's sort of the fun of the game. So in your mind, this is now just all a game of like, this is what we're building.
Definitely. Mm. This is what we're building. Like, and trying to predict the future, you know, trying to see, to follow the patterns, listen to heaps of podcasts. I listen to probably like fucking 5 to 8 hours a day of podcasts, every day. It's like reading, you know, you say like, really successful people read a book a week, let's say, for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I try to read a book a month through Audible. I've got a subscription of Audible, so I try and listen to that. And then on top of that, I try and listen to about 5 to 8 hours of podcasts a day, from different ones, from like motivational ones, from Gary Vee to Joe Rogan to crime to all different ones, just to get different knowledge and food and heaps on, and just try and see financial ones, shares, economics, all different kinds, and just trying to feel where the market is going, where society is going, and trying to tune into that and be like, okay, where can we go? Like, I'm thinking about the global financial crisis that I think is potentially going to be happening in 18 yeah. months. So I'm trying to make aware, like, okay, a lot of people are predicting 12 to 18 months. I'm saying, okay, well then, if that is the case, do we need to stop in 6 months growing and just do a bit of farming instead of hunting, and make a little bit of wedge of money in the bank, and instead of hunting and growing, just bring it all in and try and get a little nest egg to get us through that initial stage when everyone panics at the beginning, the first year everyone panics and shuts down the shop. We just have that nest egg to just push us through. So I'm thinking about these things all the time.
So, and that's very important, because I suppose what we have today is we have the opportunity to just educate ourselves for free, because I would imagine you pay for none of those podcasts.
No, they're all free, yeah.
And you get to figure everything out. So there you go, people. And you're listening right now, so you get a little bit of knowledge here.
Yeah, well, it's exactly.
I mean, if you didn't know already, we just learnt the next financial crisis happening in the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, that's what they're predicting. A lot of the financial broadcasters are saying that. Looking at the numbers, it's the first time these numbers have happened in 10 years. And the last time it did happen, these numbers happened twice in a row, that the there was a financial crisis 18 months later, and this, that, the other. So it's just something to bear in mind. Do you know what I mean? You need to be on, have your finger on the pulse, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Maybe you can just listen to along there. And what you were saying about the podcast, I think it's really interesting. Like, and I've said it before about being dyslexic, my true educational journey didn't start till podcasts.
Mm. So that's where you started getting all your knowledge.
Exactly.
Mm.
Exactly.
Okay. And was that because, I guess, it was a bit harder for you to read? Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Everything else is books or TV or documentaries, but you can't really tune in exactly what you want. Nowadays, with podcasts, you can just find the people that you're interested in and just listen to them, or audio books, and you can find like all strategic people or business people, and where people would normally, you'd have to read them books. You don't even have to read them these days.
And were you getting into podcasts before you started your business?
Yeah, I've been listening to Joe Rogan forever. Like, I couldn't tell you. I'd be lying if I give you a date. I think it was about 2012. I think maybe 2011, but maybe I'm wrong. It was round about then. Yeah, when I first got back.
Do you think you'd have a business now if you hadn't gotten sort of extra education from the podcasts? Or
I don't think we'd be as successful as we are. Yeah, I think I probably would have done. Excuse me, but all my knowledge. I didn't even have listened to Gary Vee. A lot, like fucking so much, and I
shout out Gary Vee.
Yeah, I implement a lot of his strategies, but just trying to, because he's from the wine background as well, and we're from restaurants, so I feel there's a bit of a connection there. And I believe in what he says. He's also, I think he's dyslexic as well, so and he can't read or write very well. Even if he's not dyslexic, he can't read or write very well, so we have a bit, I feel like there's a bit of a connection there. And the mentality and the way he was parented, I think, is pretty similar as well in a lot of aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Very positive, never got bollocked for not pulling good grades, like these kind of things are pretty similar.
Yeah, and I suppose what else is very powerful as well about advice from somebody like Gary Vee is what I find is it applies to just so many different aspects. Like, it could apply to so many different businesses, it could apply to like so many different points in life. Like, anything that sort of Gary's pushing, it's, you can apply it to, like, well, yeah, I've already just said it, anything really.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and just be nice, right? I like that one that you always say. I think it was him. I listen to so many, I get mixed up who said what. But it's like, what does he say? Fucking hell. It's like, with about the kids, he's like, we're not teaching them to look like the good, we're teaching them to be good. Do you know what I mean? Public, private school kids in the blazers, looking like they're all, you know, fucking ice wouldn't melt in the mouth or whatever it might be. Where meanwhile, they're all fucking dealing, not all, I'm just saying, they're all behind the parents' backs doing drugs, whatever. Just the same as the other kids, but they look like the good people. And then the other kids who don't have as much money, a bit scruffy, ripped trousers, this, that, the other, who maybe really are nice kids. Do you know what I mean? We're trying to make them. You're not trying to look like you're nice, we're trying to be nice.
And I suppose the other thing too, you know, you're talking about like the private school kids. I think the kids that get more from their parents, they're going to be inherently at a disadvantage. Now, I'm kind of smack bang in the middle where I'm like, my parents kind of somewhat sort of spoiled me a little bit, but they also made me try and earn stuff. So for me, sometimes I find I struggle a little bit motivating myself to get certain things done. And I think especially, you know, the kids that were spoiled more are really going to struggle, especially when they hit the real world, because the real world just doesn't give out like mummy and daddy.
Yeah, I think it's in your DNA. To be totally honest with you. Like, I don't know. And I, about the private school kids and that, I am knocking them, and there's millions of them that are really, really nice. I was just using that as an example of like the look in the blazer to the kid in his, you know, hoodie. That's kind of the thing I was giving. But yeah, I know what you're saying about the rich kids being given everything and don't understand that they've got to work, but I don't really know. I don't know enough about that, to be totally honest with you. I'm sure there's super hard working rich kids.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to depend, of course, as to what values their parents instill in them. So
I know
a lot of the more successful people, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, but I've heard of a handful, you know, they've been very rich, but they don't really hand their kids anything. They want to teach them to earn it. But I suppose what I'm also getting at as well is, I suppose if you haven't been given everything at the start of life, some people see that as their disadvantage, and for some that can turn into resentment to people that have been better off earlier on. But for others, I find it almost conditions them perfectly to become successful, because they know that they don't get jack shit until they earn it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's true. I think that's true. And then I also think if your parents are very successful, you're always in their shadow. That must be pretty annoying. Such and such's son, such and such's daughter, do you know what I mean? Like, you never have your own way, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I hear a lot of singers say, Lily Allen once said that, I can't remember who that is, he's a famous actor, and she used to be his daughter, and then when she got more famous, it's like, he's her dad, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Reverse the roles.
That's Lily Allen's dad, where it used to be. That's Lily Allen. That's his daughter.
See, mine was my cousin, actually, because he was a bit older than me. He was a very popular lad growing up. He's looking at potentially being a UFC fighter soon as well, which is very big news. But I was always Marcus's cousin. Whenever I went to school. So shout out Marcus if you ever listen to the show. Getting back to it all, so I just want to pull this back. So, you know, you're talking about how what you're doing now and everything you're doing in your business, right? You're living the dream. You don't see it as work. But at the same time, you are working very hard. So what I want to ask you is, what are some of the hardest things about running your own business?
Handing things over is definitely one hard thing, you know, like trusting people, because instinctively you want to do it yourself because it's better. Like, you feel like it's going to be better than if someone else does it, because you've built these customers up. And if you hand it over to someone and they do it wrong, you still cop it. Do you know what I mean? So handing things over is really difficult. Managing cash flow is also incredibly difficult. You know, it's endless. It's honestly endless. Dealing with frustration when someone reverses and hits into your van and you cop a fucking grand bill. And
it was happened?
It happens. Shit happens all the time, man. All the time. When a package, a $2,000 order goes missing, literally just goes missing on a being shipped from Victoria to New South Wales, just disappears, and everyone's like, I don't know, you just lose $2,000. When the fridge compressor goes down and you lose $3,500 worth of stock, you know, these kind of things are fucking difficult.
Mm.
And you've just got to, like, just keep, you know, like,
yeah,
cop it on the chin and that's it.
Have you had any hard... So I know your business has seen, like, a lot of growth. Mm. Have you had any, like, hard hitters that maybe almost knocked you out, or...?
In what sense, like...
And anything, like, I don't know, have you had any, like, failures or anything along those lines, or something that's gone wrong to a point where... it's, you know, put a massive strain on the business, or
financially?
Yeah,
no, not financially. No, we've obviously, right at the beginning, we were fucking skating on thin ice, and you're praying that something doesn't go wrong. Like, the turbo went on the van. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like the turbo went on the van. So we've got to fork out for a new turbo, $2,500, I think it was for at the time. It did. It sets you back, but we managed to always just scrape by, you know. Like, I had to do some outside catering gigs for a little bit to get a little bit of extra cash coming in. But no, we just fucking eat less.
literally
just eat less, exactly. Yeah. Back then I couldn't afford $10 to go boxing. Couldn't afford it. Didn't have $10. Didn't have nothing. Zero. We had no fucking money. Nothing. Couldn't afford rent. We were like borrowing money off my son's savings that people had given us when he was born. We had to use his money to pay for rent and things. It was fucking... We had no money. We were rock bottom. But just slowly, we just chipped away.
And what's that feeling like when you're sort of at rock bottom, you have nothing, and you know, you're having to go to people and, like, borrow?
Not people,
no.
Oh, it was money that we had... from my son's, when he was born. You know, family give you money.
Yeah.
Congratulations, there's 200 bucks. Congratulations, you know, whatever. It was that. You feel fucking scary, innit? It's really fucking scary. You've got a house, you've got a newborn baby, you've got a wife, and you feel like everyone's looking at you, and then you just keep saying, we'll get there. We'll get there. Just trust me, we'll get there. That's it.
Did you have a lot of doubters, or...?
Nah.
None.
Who knows? Maybe. I have no idea. No one told me to my face. No one's ever said to me, you won't be able to do it. So I'm not sure. I don't think so. I wouldn't have thought so. Everyone knows I'm pretty fucking stupid and pretty determined.
So now, in terms of that, so you've kept on growing, and... How have you been able to scale this?
Oh. Simply, we got more customers. And simply, we just pound the pavement and get more customers. That was how we scaled it. And then we just save money from the cash flow. We save, you know, you put some away, and then buy another piece of equipment, which makes it easier to do it or faster to do it. And then... we employed someone quite early, so we could scale it. That, you know, we had two of us making the stuff, and then we got enough money and we bought an existing business. We didn't buy the business, but it was a walk-in, walk-out kind of thing. It was a pie shop. She had, like, extraction, a walk-in fridge, this, that, the other. She walked out, we walked in, and then we really went hard. We went super hard because we couldn't afford it. We moved in, and it was just like, we need to start fucking going hard.
So it was like those early days again?
But we were really lucky, man. Like, as we moved in, we got a really good customer. Like, within... they approached us as well, to be fair. Within, like, I think it was in the first 6 or 8 weeks of getting the shop, they approached us, and we started... it was called Harris Farm. It's called Harris Farm in New South Wales. They've got, I think it's like 32 stores. And they said, we'd like to put you in all our stores.
No.
So that was really good. So that was like a huge cash flow injection when they started ordering. So that, when we got that, that was, and they've ordered every week, apart from, like, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks since then. So it's been like nearly coming, I think it's like 2.5 years they've ordered every week. So that was really, really good cash injection that really pushed us forward. And then after that, just again, get more. And like I keep saying, that snowball effect, it's really hard to roll a little snowball, a little pebble, to get any momentum. But once you've got a decent sized one and you give it one push, you get heaps of snow on that snowball. It's the same thing. Once it gets going, then people start ringing you. Like, we used to be, no one ever used to ring us. The phone never rang. Never fucking rang. there would be no one saying, can you supply us? But once you start getting a few, they start talking, they're really good. Someone maybe leaves one shop, goes to another shop, takes you, say, oh, I left that shop, I've gone to this new shop, can we put you in this shop? Do you know what I mean? Like, And then people go into shops and start seeing you. Dane from the Grand Hyatt, he was in Leaf, which is a shop in Brighton. He lives near there, and he's seen our terrain, he ate it, he loved it. He's the executive chef at the Hyatt. He got in touch and said, oh, I love that, can I get some? So when you're more around, more people start having a bit more confidence in you. So
yeah, so, and it's all about building that momentum sort of one day at a time.
Definitely one day at a time. Definitely.
So I think it was a quote I heard, and this is where you could maybe frame that in the context of how you could use this in your everyday. So, you know, you might be listening thinking, I don't have a business, I don't want to be a business owner. Well, think about it like this. I suppose everybody at some stage in their life probably wants to do better than what they are in some aspect. And the only way you're ever going to improve is through daily improvements. The thing is, starting is easy, being consistent is not. But with the consistency, and as you've sort of outlined with how your business sort of scaled, you've got to keep doing the same things, and then once you start getting the momentum, everything just starts to grow. And I guess it's really the same in life. If you want to sort of make any form of change or go somewhere, you have to build that momentum up one good day at a time and just always keep putting that work in.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly that. You just got to keep going. And like, if you think about running a marathon, it's fucking pretty daunting, but, you know, you just run a little bit and then run a little bit, train, and then, you know, before you know it, you can run a marathon.
So when you were planning this all out, did you have the big picture sort of in your mind to begin with, or did you just say, I've got this idea, I think I'll make a business?
Things, and even now, things change. You've got to be quite fluid, you know, you've just got to be at a roll with it. Like, I'm not... I've got an idea where we want to go now, but that might not be the idea it's going to be in 2 years' time, because we'll adjust. You've always got to adjust, you know. My actual idea was maybe selling logs to delis, like logs to tureens and logs to delis, logs to hotels, logs to outside caterers. And we do that now, but it's a tiny percentage of what we do. We're actually heaps more retail, so much more retail. Like, I don't know the percentage accurately, but somewhere like 85% is retail. So, and I didn't envisage that, but that we've seen that going, and we weren't going to do a pâté, we were just going to do terrines. Beck pushed me and said, I think we should do a pâté, and I was like, I was a bit apprehensive because I felt like all the pâtés on the market, there was a lot of pâtés on the market, obviously they weren't up to the same standard that we're at, but I just felt like there was a lot at the market. But she said, I still think we can break that. Now that's a huge part of the business. I wouldn't have done it, but Beck said we should. I had faith in what she said, so we did it. So I didn't envisage being retail as much as like pre-portioned. I thought it was going to be logs. That didn't work. So then we went down that avenue. I didn't think we'd be doing pâté, but Beck thought we did. So we went down that avenue. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mean your big picture isn't like, I've got to be there and that's what it's going to be. It might twist completely different. You've just got to roll with the punches, and you can have a plan. I think just have a plan to get you going, and then see how it's going, and then your next plan, and then your next plan, and then your next plan. Do you know what I mean? And don't be like so rigid.
Yeah, you have to be fluid.
Definitely.
So you can't just like have your mindset on one thing, because, you know, you might have your mindset on that one idea, but life might not take you that way.
Exactly.
The opportunities might not open up.
Exactly.
That first plan might go to absolute shit.
Definitely. And you might, yeah, exactly. I've heard so many stories. I kind of, you know, like, started off building cars and ended up building motorbikes. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? There's a lot of things that can happen.
And there's always a chance event in those stories as well that throws them completely off course.
Yeah.
And then, what I want to ask you, so teamwork, you said, is very important. And, you know, you're talking about how your wife, Beck, so she's your business partner in this as well, how she's pushed you in certain directions. How important is having that good support when you're in business?
Personally, because I've come from England with no friends, no family, just me and Beck, and that's it. So, like, I don't feel like I need that much support in that sense. But in relationships, you need. I felt like I would have needed a huge amount of support from my partner, in my life partner, and then within the business. Yeah, we're quite lucky. We have very similar thoughts, and I guess I'm a little bit more hard-headed. Beck's a little bit more fluid. And we have different roles. Do you know what I mean? I'm a bit more visionary. You know, I feel like I can know where the business is going. And Beck's a bit more like holding it all together. A lot more holding it all together. Do you know what I mean? Without her, like, to get me get an email off me is like, it's very unlikely you're going to maybe get a message through Instagram or whatever. But like all emails, even my emails, Beck will sort all them out. All financials, zero. She'll show me the numbers. We'll go through the numbers sitting down. We'll do predictions and forecasts, and she'll implement all that. I'll have a marketing idea. We'll speak about it. She'll implement it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that it's really important for us. We both have our same roles. Like she wanted a pate. She couldn't make the pate, but she felt like we need a pate. So then I created the pate, not for her, but for the business on her recommendation. So, you know, you've just got to work together and be prepared to lose. Like, I didn't want to make a pate. But then I had to say, well, you know, I'm not going to put a wall up and say, I'm not making one. It's not about me. It's about the business.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's almost as like a little bit of an extra push.
Yeah, it's just like you've just got to be prepared not to have barriers and be like, okay, let's try it. And if it works, it works. Like, no point me saying, I don't want to make a pate, then we're not going to make it. I am the boss.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I'm a cog I'm a wheel in the big picture. Do you know what I mean? A cog in the machine. I can't be like a spoiled brat throwing my toys in out the pram. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We go together. And if this hadn't worked, I wouldn't have said, I told you. That's not going to get us anywhere. Like, you know, if I say let's do something, that doesn't work. She's not going to say I told you. We just go together. So I guess what we're saying is, it's very important to be as one and not blaming each other. I knew that wasn't going to work, so why did we bother doing it? You know, you make a decision, even if you don't do it, you put your point across, they put their point across, you say, okay, let's do this, you move forward together, and if it works, it works together. If it fails, it fails together. It's as simple as that.
And I think, you know, I just want to comment briefly, you know, I think it's quite nice and like, very nice that you've got yourself a situation where, you know, you're working with your partner. So she's not only your life partner, but she's your business partner, and you're able to work off each other like that. And it's not like one person is sort of, I suppose, taking all the control or anything along those lines. So, you know,
I'm lucky, for sure. I'm lucky. Mm. And I'm the harder one to work with. There's no two ways about it. Becky's super easy to work with, and I'm not so easy to work with, because the way my mind works, the way I jump around, the way I want new ideas, new ventures, let's do this, let's do that, let's do the other. We were buying stuff from Queensland and distributing it from another, not 3 weeks ago, I had all this, no, maybe about 8 weeks ago. I was on about getting a new fridge and this and that and the other, and she was like, oh, I don't know about this, this isn't, you know, and I'm like off to the races, I'm doing it. And then she was like, I'm not sure about this, but still supporting me all the way. And I don't know if this is a good idea. And then right at the end, I said, you're right, it's not a good idea. And we just scrapped the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I was, but that happens all the time with me. Like, I'm fucking off to the races with Summit.
Mm.
So, yeah.
The original idea, though, did you come up with this together? Or?
I think it was my idea.
Yeah, okay.
I'm pretty sure it was my idea. But like, do you think we should do this? Not like, this is what we're doing. It's like, do you think we should do this? We don't really have that many options.
Mm.
And she was like, you know, yeah. That was basically I think it was as a whole my idea, but yeah, is the answer.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was my idea.
So at the end of the day, teamwork definitely makes the dream work.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Yeah, definitely teamwork. And understanding each other.
Mm.
Understanding each other's needs. That's the thing. And it hasn't been easy. Fuck, it hasn't been easy. Mm. It's difficult.
Would you say your marriage has grown with the business as well?
Yeah. And then a baby as well, you know.
Yeah.
A baby as well thrown in the mix. You've got to get strong. And yeah, sometimes it's intense sometimes. You know, you've got things going on at work. Work, I say work. But things going on. It's quite high pressure. You're not fighting over, but like you're like, oh, we're pulling and pushing at one thing. And then you come home, and then Monty, my son, he's maybe like being a bit of a bugger for doing something, you know, drawing or on something or a bit screaming, and try to keep you calm with that. And maybe Beck says something I don't agree with, or I say something that she doesn't agree with. So you've got the work disagreement, the kid disagreement, and then you've got to put all that. He goes to bed, and you've got to put all that aside and be like, it's all cool, man. well, tomorrow we'll move on. Let's, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tomorrow's a new day, always. Tomorrow is always a new day, always.
Mm.
Don't hold any grudges the next day.
That's business advice and marriage advice right there.
Yeah, tomorrow's a new day. Let's just start again. Swipe the slate clean. Let's go again. There's no point fucking holding grudges or whatever. Let's start a new day, fresh day. Let's get going.
Yeah, and I've heard that before. Just like just general sort of like relationship advice. Like, you know, never go to bed on an argument.
Yeah, exactly. That sometimes that we will. We don't argue. We don't argue, you know, because I'm always right. No, I'm joking. That is definitely. I'm rarely.
If Beck is listening, you are in trouble.
I'm
does she
rarely
listen,
right.
She listen to your show?
Yeah, bits and bobs. She's fucking sick of listening to me.
She has to put up with it all day.
Exactly.
So, speaking of your show, tell us about this show. Why did you start this show?
A few reasons. One of the reasons, to be honest, it was because. I was out of the kitchen and I was missing that kitchen crack that, like, I felt like I put so much into it, and then I was like out doing my retail thing. I just missed that kind of interaction with the chefs and the food and the creative side like that. I did miss that, and I just miss chatting to chatting food and chatting shop, because that's basically all chefs do is talk about food. That was one reason. A business standpoint, I thought it would be good to be represented with. I'd put a lot of effort building relationships. So I kind of wanted to not show them off, like, look at me, but like it kind of verified the standard of people that we associate with. We're not just cowboys just giving this a go. We've spent a lot of time in this industry, and then I also felt like I didn't want to like sell my story, like look at me, this is what I've done, this is what I've achieved. But I felt like over a duration of a podcast, over many episodes, many hours, people would get to know me and what I've done through that, as opposed to like on Instagram trying to say this is what I've achieved, look at me, look what I can do. I just wanted people to gradually get to know me through that.
And then, so the more specific focus on that, is that very guest to guest? Does it have to do with like who your guest is?
In what sense would you mean?
So like the main focus of it. So it's called Cooking the Books. Yeah.
Oh, it is definitely guest to guest for sure. So like we might have like people who produce honey, rooftop honey. We had them guys on who have honey hives all over the city on top of the high rises, talking about honey, talking about honey laundering.
Honey laundering.
People who were mixing honey with glucose.
Which episode is this? You might have to shout this out.
I can't remember the number. Rooftop Honey is the people. Talking about that, you know, talking. So that episode was very specific about honey, do you know what I mean? And the dodgy goings on around honey and whatnot. And how Australia is, what I think they said, it's the highest producing country in the world for honey. And then using honeys, exploiting honeys, exploiting bees and bees being stolen from people when they're out pollinating. They use bees literally to pollinate almond fields. There's beekeepers that take their bees to different almond fields and let the bees pollinate them, and then they take them away. They get paid for moving their bees around. So, you know, different. I don't know if many people know about these things that go on.
No, right, this is news to me.
Exactly. Like, how do you think all the almond plant trees and that get pollinated? No one's walking around rubbing them or whatever. They need bees to do that. So then people take their bees. There's documentaries on Netflix about these kind of things, and it happens here in Australia, obviously. So just discussing that. So that episode is like that. Then it might be just like me with some friends, like Tom Anglesey, who. We've been friends forever, and he's had a really interesting career with some really high-end chefs. Maybe just chatting shit with him, or a friend of mine, Chris Eagle, he just lost 57 kilos in a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was all about his journey and losing weight and being a chef and trying to manage, juggle your time and train and being surrounded by food and booze and trying to cut that out and his journey with that. There's so many. I said, you know, I think we've done 42 episodes now, you know. Like last week was the first episode of this season was with about mushrooms, a guy that goes and picks mushrooms 200 kilos at a time and then delivers them to the restaurant, picks fennel pollen. Well, for the chef swimming team, that's a little bit of fennel pollen. He's actually hand picked all that with snakes and all sorts. It's fucking, you know, just all about the hospitality industry.
Mm.
Cheesemongers, brewers, heaps of stuff.
It's a great show. So if you go check out Cooking the Books, you are going to find a wide variety.
Yeah, of hospitality chat.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then in terms, so your business, City Larder. So if people want to try out your products, where can we find your products?
Oh, in Mel, a lot of places, like. A lot of high-end or even just independent, should I say, not high-end, but independent butchers, independent supermarkets, Leo's, Boccaccio's, Peter Boucher's as a butcher's, David Jones, Peter Boucher's, Canning's, a lot of the more independents. Mm. Yeah, a lot of independent grocers, butchers, and supermarkets. Independents.
IGAs.
Yeah, like IGAs.
All right, and finally, Robbie, what is next for you and for City Larders?
We are looking to just keep growing. We are looking to employ some more staff. We're looking at the market to release these new ready-to-go proteins.
And I want to ask on that. I forgot to ask earlier. Is that going to be more of like a product sort of maybe for... You're targeting it maybe people who go to the gym? Because you mentioned proteins.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, the good quality proteins like beef cheek, pork belly, high in fat, good for the keto.
Yeah, I did a fair bit of keto.
Yeah, good diet. For the keto. And then duck. Yeah, I guess gym, not really. We're definitely not a health brand. We're not a health brand. We're not trying to be a health brand. We're a luxurious... treat yourself brand, but done right. You know what I mean? No added sugars and no added flavors and all these kind of things. It's just good food, good restaurant food done for you to enjoy at home, basically, is what it is. And it's designed for people who don't want to have ready meals, like them pre-packaged ready meals. No knocking them, whatever they are, what they are, but they have...
They're a bit rubbish.
They've got a lot of additives and sugars and things in them, high salt and this, that, the other... in them, where this is like a good piece of protein, ready cooked, ready to go in 30 minutes, and all you might have to do is saute some vegetables or put the rice cooker on and blanch some green beans, or do you know what I mean? Like, or put the rice cooker on, have a good kimchi, and you might just go rice, kimchi, half an avocado, and you've got the pork belly, you might, or the duck leg, you're just going to drop on top. So that you sort out the bottom bit. A little bit of a take on HelloFresh.
Yeah.
But you do your shopping and you grab the protein. Because ultimately the protein is the hard bit to cook. That's the most difficult bit. So we'll take care of that. And you just add your garnish, we would say, in the restaurant industry.
So you're bringing the restaurant quality to the kitchen.
Well, we're bringing the restaurant quality kitchen. Exactly, to the home kitchen for you to enjoy on your time. So, you know, you can have it in the afternoon, or you can have it sat in front of the telly, or in a dinner party environment, that kind of thing. Yeah, and we're trying to make it so the very you can utilize them in lots of different ways. You know, the pork belly, you could just have it as one roasted piece with some vegetables or what, however you know, or whatever. Or you could dice it up and put it in a saute and put it in a pasta. Mm. The duck leg you could shred down and put in a salad, or again in like a ragu, or you could roast it whole. And the beef cheek you could dice up and put in a pie or in a risotto or them kind of things.
No, I really like this idea. Plenty of options as well. Mm. I hope it's within my price range. I definitely want to check this out.
Yeah, well, it's not cheap. Things aren't fucking cheap.
No.
You know, especially when we're using organic beef and we're using free-range pork and we're using homemade lard and, red wine, and these things aren't for free. And then we've got to pay the staff by the hour. Everyone's got to be paid well, as you've probably heard on the news, that everyone, wage theft and all that. You've got to pay everyone super and tax and everyone. We've got to make a little bit of money. The retailer's got to make a little bit of money. Like, fucking how cheap do you want it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's
right.
A reality. Like,
yeah.
People, you can go to a local takeaway, but is that free range? Are you looking after local suppliers? Is that chicken battery farmed and shit and going to some big corporation where they're just looking after the shareholders? Or are you going to a small farm and enjoying a piece of pork that's been made in a farm which hasn't got any shareholders, which put back into the environment, back into the economy? Or you know, you go into an independent grocer's or an independent butcher's as opposed to like Woolies or Coles, and they're supporting the local community. Do you know what I mean? It depends what you want.
Yeah.
I'm all about the local, all about the small independents, farmers markets and these kind of things. It's just the way I am. It's what I'm into.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing these days. I mean, I suppose there's like a whole wide range of issues in terms of like food, how it's produced. And I mean, for me myself, like I try to buy the best quality food that I can from time to time. But, you know, living week to week, that can be difficult.
It can be difficult, for sure. It can be difficult, but it depends where you are. But also, I don't, you know, like you're walking around with a fucking, you know, $1,000 iPhone. You're saying you're struggling for cash. Do you know what I mean? Or you're walking around a brand new Air Max and telling me you're struggling for cash. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
It depends where you are. And I don't knock people for that. I'm not knocking them. I understand. And it's not... I drink fucking... You know, like, I drink $20 bottle of wine.
Mm.
Where some people think you should be drinking $60 bottle of wine. That's their preference. Do you know what I mean? Like, each to their own, isn't it? Each to their own.
It's one of those each to their own, but yeah.
It is. And I don't judge anyone for that. Do you know what I mean?
And I like that point you made just then. You know, people could say, go around saying they're shopping for money, you've got $1,000 iPhone. So on that note, I just want to say, you know, never forget to be grateful for what you have. I think that's something that gets lost a little bit in this world.
Yeah, fucking, you got health.
Yeah.
Health is wealth, and that is the fact.
All right, I think that would be a good note to end on. I think my camera is about to run out of space. Robbie, this has been an absolute pleasure.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Don't forget to check out Cooking the Books.
Beautiful.
And...